The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse.
The beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan.
Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heart of the Missouri Ozarks, welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker. You know, it's been a while since we've done this show.
Oh, yeah, half a year almost.
Gosh, have we done any in 2016?
We did one in January.
Almost half a year.
It is.
You know, that's like, I don't know, 50 pounds ago from me or something. I'm not sure I'm the same person and I was.
Listeners are saying, yes, you sound much thinner.
Yeah, I do. I really do. Well, you know what? We said some time back that we would try to post things weekly, but then it became clear that we simply didn't have time to even do once a month. So PID has had to sort of linger in the background for a long time, and we really hated to post anything on our website saying officially closed for business on it. So we've just decided that we'll do it when we can, and with the Brexit vote, we just have to.
When circumstances dictate, we will jump in. A lot of what we would be talking about.
Nobody wants us to jump in, but we will anyway.
Yes. A lot of what we would have been talking about is what we're talking about on Sci Friday on Skywatch TV.
Yeah, the only difference is that on Skywatch TV, we've only got about 24, 25 minutes to say those things. And PID Radio, we can go as long as we want.
That's right. We don't have to fit into a network schedule or anything like that.
No, we don't.
We'll just kind of roll out as much as we feel like we're
roll
making
out
sense.
The barrel until the monkeys all get out.
Yeah. So anyway, the big event of the past week, of course, was the Brexit vote on Thursday, which really took people by surprise. In fact, I came to bed Thursday and had been reading, you know, just seeing headlines, and at some point late in the night, the leader of the UKIP party, UK Independence Party, Nigel Farage, was saying, "Well, it looks like we lost." And then wake up Friday morning and, whoa, 52 to 48, roughly, the people in Britain have spoken. They want out of the EU.
Well, that's what you take away from the vote. It was relatively close, about 4 points apart or something like that. Depending on who is reporting on it and depending on how many hours have passed since the vote ended.
Right.
You get a lot. Right now, I was just reading an article where the claim at Business Insider is the people who voted to leave didn't really want to leave. They were only trying to send a message. And now they've got buyer's remorse.
Oh, really? No. I think the differences in the votes, typically, I think older voters and, shall we say, people whose families have lived in England for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Younger people and recent arrivals were more excited about staying in, more interested in staying in the EU.
Well, that makes sense for a number of reasons. And one of those is many people will say, well, if you are a recent immigrant, you're going to, you don't want things to change.
Mm-hmm.
You want to feel like you're going to get to remain there. But honestly, the EU goes way back to the common market, and that's been around since the 50s, early 60s, long time. So there are many people alive today that they've only known this common market world.
Mm-hmm.
However, the common market originally was all just about trade barriers.
Yeah, coal and steel,
yeah,
I think.
It totally changed in the 90s, 80s and 90s, and it has now become a move toward a mega state, a mega country. And it's sort of the first pin in, sort of first mountain and becoming the New World Order.
Yeah. Treaty of Rome, 1957, is what created the European Economic Community, the so-called Common Market, to try to bring about economic integration. The six founding members were Belgium, France, Italy, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, and West Germany. And then it grew from there. And that's not surprising, because as people in power get power, they try to consolidate and extend their power. Once a government takes hold of a power, it never gives it back. We're finding that out here in the United States. Things that were voted in place as a temporary measure, for example, the income tax, which was supposed to finance World War One, is still here 100 years later.
Yeah. Well, once you get a tax, it never goes away.
No, but government powers are the same way. It is to the credit of the voters in the EU, in the UK rather, that they saw the increasingly intrusive nature of the EU government in Brussels. What we're seeing might be a return to nationalism, which is a sentiment that globalists have been trying to squash for the last half a century, at least, if not longer. There's this idea that if we are a global community, and I saw some tweets and comments from commentators out there saying, well, you know, look, we live in Alan Colmes, who was on Fox News the other night, said, we live in a global community and people are just going to have to get used to it. Well, that's a fine sounding thing, but it flies in the face of common sense and history.
Alan Colmes is coming at this from an entirely different perspective. Now, I'm not talking about left versus right.
Right.
He comes from everyone around him.
Mm-hmm.
Is in media. Everyone around him is constantly soaking in the world of the New World Order.
Mm-hmm.
So to him, that's all that's around.
Yeah.
If you live out in middle America or in the countryside of England or in Scotland or many of the other countries that are now starting to lift their little hands and go, you know, maybe we should have a referendum too.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. All we really want is to be left alone to live our lives, raise our children, possibly raise a few chickens and cows.
Yeah. And the governments of the world don't seem inclined to want to do that. And the bigger the government, the more intrusive it becomes.
Exactly. Because if you are self-reliant, they cannot govern you.
Right. Right. And here in the United States, we've seen that manifesting in a lot of different ways. I just am wondering, and we haven't made a big deal of it, but, you know, we buy milk from a local farmer. And
that day's coming when he's going to be shut down.
That's, you know, I wonder about that, because we've seen stories from other parts of the country where the FDA has suddenly sent in the brute squad to say, you can't do this
you're
anymore.
You're the brute squad.
Yeah. So the interesting aspect of this, Bill Salas has an interesting article that he's posted at his website, prophecydepot.com. about the biblical perspective of Brexit and looking at it specifically through a prophetic lens. So Bill and I will be talking later this coming week, Friday, and that will be a future view from the bunker, but also hopefully get a shorter version of it for Skywatch TV. And we're going to do a Skype video thing so I can...
Yeah, you may also be discussing that on Tuesday when you go down to Blue Eye.
I'm sure we will, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, too.
More to come.
Yeah.
By the way, one of the outcomes after this Brexit vote is, well, over the next few months, this is going to take place. It's sort of taken, I think it's number 50, clause number 50 or something like that, of the Lisbon Accord that all of the EU member nations had to
approve.
Vote on and approve, even if it meant they had to vote over and over again.
In the case of Ireland. You keep doing it until you get it right.
But this clause 50 or paragraph 50 or whatever it's called, it's essentially getting out. And the procedure for doing that, well, they've not really done this before. So I think depending on what article you read, you're going to see a lot of things. David Cameron, who has resigned effective in October, believes that it's going to take several months for all of the meetings to take place and probably deal making to take place. Okay, we're leaving, but you can keep us happy if you, you know, don't in you know, what's the word I want? enforce or put huge tariffs on us because of we're no longer in that common market anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
There are lots of reasons why Germany and France and other major players within the EU want to keep Britain happy, but it may be that by October, if not before, Boris Johnson mm-hmm. will become the new PM.
Yeah.
He's on the record in 2014 as having said, "My chances of being the PM are about as good as the chances of finding Elvis on Mars or my being reincarnated as an olive."
Well, you know, people would have said that about Donald Trump a year ago. About him becoming the president.
I know.
And I would have been one of them when I first heard his first speech where he talked about, the Mexicans are wonderful people, but let's be honest, they're not sending us the best people. And
he said all sorts of things like that, and nobody can knock him down.
Right.
He just says, yeah, I own it.
Yeah. So, yeah, but Boris Johnson is sort of in that mold. So
he's also on record as saying, I'd like thousands of schools as good as the one I went to, Eton.
Now, you're going to have to explain that for people who don't
understand an adjective versus an adverb.
As good as the one I went. Okay. Yeah. It took me a second.
Yeah. Should be as well as. Uh-huh. But Eton is a very preppy, very, very expensive school.
And Boris Johnson is smart enough to know what he did there.
He did, and he probably said it on purpose. He likes to position himself as an outrageous maverick, and he's done a really good job of it over the years. Mm-hmm. I can't find the quote, but one of my favorite ones, and I'll have to go down this list to see if it's in here, is his claim that if you vote Tory, and he's with the Conservative Party, the Tory mm-hmm. Party, if you vote Tory, your wife's breasts will get larger, and there was something else in there. It was one of the funniest lines.
Yeah, you look 10 pounds younger, 10 pounds lighter, and 10 years younger.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But anyway, he is he says some pretty interesting things. So I personally would think it would be a great world as far as, comedians are concerned to have Donald Trump as the president of the U.S.
Boris Johnson
as the PM. Wouldn't you love that?
I think that would be awesome. I'd also like to see the United States Congress adopt president's questions.
Oh, similar like prime to minister's questions.
Right.
That's the best part of living in the United Kingdom is you get to watch your world leader, mm-hmm. so to speak, grilled every Sunday night.
Yeah. And it's great entertainment. We used to watch it on one of the cable channels back
in
years ago.
It was a whole lot of fun. And who wouldn't love to see Boris Johnson doing that?
Oh, yeah. Well, or see Donald Trump doing that.
I'd love it.
All the Democrats on one side, Republicans on the other. Guy asks a question that's kind of rude and offensive, and all the guys on the other side of the aisle yell, whoa!
If you've never seen Prime Minister's Questions, it's probably on YouTube. You really need to go take a look at it because these are legitimate questions, but they're almost always couched as gotchas.
Yeah.
And the Prime Minister almost always volleys back in some way that it's essentially a shouting match between the two sides.
It is wonderful entertainment.
It is
wonderful entertainment. So, I would love to see that here in the U.S. The problem is that here in the U.S., we also have a history of congressmen, clubbing one another with canes and, back in the day, but still.
You walk in and the guy's saying, so are you going to vote with me or not? While he's sharpening his knife.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a
literally,
true story.
That is a true story.
Yeah,
yes.
And I can't remember which congressman it applies to.
But he was sitting there and he had the knife and he was sharpening it on the bottom of his shoe.
Very prominently, mm-hmm. Very obvious. Yeah, are you going to vote with me or not? Yeah, we can't, the country was
very different.
Very different in those days. Mm-hmm. Not saying it was better, but I'm just saying that as a citizen, you had a little more latitude than you do these days under the government. Anyway, so this will be interesting. But as you're right, there are other countries in the EU now that are kind of raising their hands and saying, that looks pretty good. So France, Italy, the Netherlands, Denmark, all saying that they want their referenda. The leader of the Front National in France, Marine Le Pen.
Sorry, I just saw another one.
Oh, another
Boris Johnson on Tony Blair. He's a mixture of Harry Houdini and a greased piglet.
Harry Houdini and a greased piglet.
That's a great way to describe him. He managed to get out of anything.
Okay.
Nailing Blair is like trying to pin jelly to a wall.
Well, that's an old sentence. In fact, Hal Lindsey used that phrase about dominionists.
Oh. go Hal.
Dominion theology. He said, trying to pin them down on theologies, like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall.
Yeah.
So, and that was a book that George Brewer, listener, sent to me a while back.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's a good book. I love Hal Lindsey.
Yeah. And
I'd love to meet him. Wish he'd come to Crane.
Well, that would be awesome. But he and he was citing the work of Tommy Ice, who we did get to meet a couple of years ago in Colorado Springs on that. So
they we're going back next month.
Yeah.
They're letting us back.
Amazingly,
I know. I thought those signs that they posted up and said, Gilbert's go home, I figured for sure we'd never get to come back. But hey, they've forgotten clearly.
Well, so the question, and this is one I want to talk to Bill about, and I just want to get your take on this. One of the key components of end times prophecy for many premillennial, pre-tribulation rapture believers, and we are in that camp.
I am indeed.
Yeah. Was looking at the revived Roman Empire as the source from which the Antichrist would come, and looking at the European Union as that entity.
That's what I was taught many years ago, and a lot of people still think it.
Yeah. And so the question is, if Britain is leaving, and now we see other nations like France, Italy, the Netherlands, Denmark, all want to leave as well, what does this mean for the EU in terms of Bible prophecy?
Well, that's a really good question. If you look at Daniel's prophecy of the giant statue beginning with the golden head, and you go down to the legs of iron, the feet of iron.
Yes.
Legs of bronze or something like that. But anyway, you get down, it's a Roman Empire because they march on their legs, and they were well known for essentially being, you can't get us, we're going to take you apart, you know, an iron sort of imagery, and that these iron mixed with miry clay toes, 10 of them, representing, and 10, originally when I was studying Bible prophecy back in, you know, I don't know, I was 4 years old or something, but no, seriously, I was maybe 9 or 10. I was pretty young. It was being taught that the common market was going, well, it didn't have it 10 members at that time. It didn't. But they went very quickly from like 8 to 13. So bypass 10.
Yep.
So it couldn't have been 10, but 10 may be a number that is poetic in its interpretation because there are 10 toes, but it could be that, or the presumption is that because there are toes that there are 10 of them. But it could be 10 in many ways represents the world because 6 is the number of man and 4 is the number of the earth. And if you combine it together, man and the earth, that's geopolitical in speech. And so 10 would be the number of a world government, you could say. And if the EU was supposed to be the foundation for a world government, or the first phase of it, it's failing. But that's what we're told, that they would not cling together.
That's right.
That they would be smashed.
Yeah, the dragon in Revelation, the beast, 7 heads and 10 horns.
Yes, which was also, you know, maybe exactly 10 nations, but it also may be, this is, I'm telling you, it's the entire world.
Yeah, 7 continents and, you know.
Yeah, and the 7 heads, that's, that boy, they're, you know, David Flynn got into some of the imagery within the skies and talking about the dragon and how the dragon, the Hydra in the stars, has 7 heads.
That's very interesting, and Peter Goodgame pointed out in his book, The Return of the Antichrist, that Tiamat, the chaos dragon from Sumerian legend that is echoed in, of course, the Bible as Leviathan and Canaanite, Lotan, I think, in Canaanite. But the Sumerian depiction of Tiamat is a dragon with 7 heads.
But we're also told that it's not just only that it has 7 heads, but the 8th head appears.
Yes.
And it is one of the 7.
Right.
So we have a repeat of someone. Nimrod?
Well, that was Peter's contention. And I know that he's been doing some additional work now in looking at parallels between the Exodus and end times prophecy. So I'm not sure he's fully committed to that interpretation, but that was one that was interesting, certainly. There are a lot of theories out there, and we'll say something that we talked about last week in our New Testament study at GilbertHouse.org when we were going through the Olivet Discourse, and Jesus was prophesying about his return, that it's pretty clear from the biblical record that those who had the opportunity to learn directly from him in the first century didn't understand not only what Jesus was talking about, but what the Old Testament Hebrew prophets were prophesying
right.
about the Messiah's first appearance. And so we're probably not going to understand all of the prophecies about his return any more clearly than they did then.
No,
so,
probably not.
We can draw some conclusions, I think. I mean, it's pretty clear that Jesus' return is before the millennial reign. And I think postmillennialism just doesn't have a leg to stand on.
There are some things, though, that he says that are so clear, you're crazy if you miss it.
Yeah.
One of those is when you see the abomination of desolation,
right.
run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't even stop to get your coat. Just run.
Yeah. But that will be during that 70th week.
It will be. And it was it was fulfilled previously,
right.
but that's, you know, a now and later
right.
thing that,
already,
that
but
you
not
see
yet.
All the time in prophecy.
Mm-hmm. And partial preterists or preterists, will those who believe that all of prophecy has been fulfilled already and now we're already in the millennium, will point back to Antiochus Epiphanes and to the destruction of Jerusalem in 70.
Have they even looked at the millennial reign? Let's see. Jesus is in Jerusalem during that. I haven't seen him.
And the objection of many of the preterists is that they can't get it. They can't accept that during that 1,000 years where Jesus is literally ruling on earth, that there will be a group of people who somehow rebel and that Satan will come out at the end of the 1,000 years for a little while. And there'll be another Gog-Magog confrontation.
That's not hard to buy. I don't know what their problem is.
No.
These are human beings, unredeemed,
right?
Mortal human beings that are still populating the earth, along mm-hmm. with those of us who have already been changed.
Right.
Will be helping to reign during that 1,000-year period. But there will be people who have never been exposed to that test.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, when Satan is released, they get tested, and a lot of them will fail.
Absolutely. And there are other aspects of prophecy that you have to ignore to buy a preterist or even partial preterist view of Bible prophecy, because if this is the millennium, then Satan is in chains now. And I don't see that looking around at the state of the world today.
No, he is not.
So that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No.
Nor did at any point after Jesus' assumption into heaven in the year 33, did we see him returning in the clouds with great glory, which is what he told us to look for upon his return.
No, nor did we see Armageddon.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Or Harmoid.
Yeah, so there are a lot of things that you have to ignore. But sadly, there are a lot of Christians who are skipping over those things because they can't accept this or that. And they decide, I'm not going to accept this, or I don't accept that things are going to get worse and worse for us in the church because I like winning better. And so I'm going to adopt this victorious eschatology with a church triumphant, and we Christianize the world so Jesus can return.
You know what I am so grateful for is that the Lord God Almighty didn't limit his decision to sacrifice himself for us
mm-hmm.
based on whether or not he could buy into what we would and wouldn't do.
Yeah, exactly.
He accepts us with all of our flaws.
And thank God that he does.
Amen.
But there are a lot of aberrant and some flat heretical beliefs out there that somehow people have read into the Bible instead of pulling out of the Bible.
Well, no one is perfect when it comes to interpretation
but
of the Bible.
Well, no, that is true. That is absolutely true. And that's why I'm trying to be a little more gracious about things than I was in the past.
Oh, sorry, but preterist, that just makes no sense.
It doesn't. And when there are things that don't make sense like that, or like, again, postmillennialism.
Yes.
It's just not in there. Sorry.
Yeah. You can argue about pre-trib. I am pre-trib, but premillennial,
right.
We have to be premillennial.
Yeah.
Sorry, he's not come yet.
Exactly right. So how exactly we get to that point where he comes back and collects us, I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting to speculate. I've got ideas, but I've got, I think, ideas that are probably more valid on how the enemy is going to use the incorrect interpretation of Bible prophecy to fool people into mm-hmm. either just causing a lot of mayhem or possibly even welcoming the Antichrist. Yeah. So,
and you're going to be talking about that in Colorado City, if they let us in.
Yeah. Yeah. So we shall see.
They see that t-shirt you're wearing. You'll never let us in.
That's true. Yeah. It's the
Darmok and Jalad
at Tanagra. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, it could be that some black swan event, something we can't foresee, causes a crisis in the EU that forces them together.
I think that is what we will see happen. I think that, it was predicted long ago by Reagan that if there's something outside of our world that comes in to threaten the entire world, then we will all pull together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was the main theme in the original Independence Day movie.
Yeah.
The second movie just came out. It's not getting great reviews, so maybe that's one you can skip this summer. But the idea that some major issue comes along that everybody has to unite over, and it may be that that's when we'll see the Antichrist rise up and say, "I've got all the answers."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be a something like that, a false disclosure.
It could be a plague.
It could be It could be a plague. We're seeing some very disturbing diseases that have popped up here recently. Zika, which is maybe not debilitating, but certainly could be very tragic.
No, it could be a solar event. It could be something that causes a massive EMP major part of the developed world. And suddenly we have to work together, assuming we can communicate in some way.
Yeah, we'd be back to smoke signals and tin cans with string.
Yeah,
but
I'm going to have to buy some more string.
We need a longer cord. Yeah.
And a bigger boat.
So there are a lot of things out there that are still to be fulfilled. And I think we will all be surprised one way or another in how they are fulfilled. Bill Salas's article is worth reading. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, and we'll discuss that with him in more depth on Friday this coming week. And then you'll hear that at some point in the future. So I'm still trying to figure out how to get a reasonable schedule for a view from the bunker again. But the Brexit issue is one that is going to have interesting consequences. We come up to the first full week after the vote beginning tomorrow. Interesting to watch the headlines. And we're seeing all kinds of alarmist stuff. Alan Greenspan, this is the worst. For who?
Yeah, exactly. How is this the worst?
For bankers?
Excuse me?
For bankers. So
yes,
I guess
that's exactly who it's the worst for. It's for bankers.
Yeah.
There will be some issues regarding travel and import fees and things like that, but it may be that taxes will go down. It may be that it will affect the massive influx of people from elsewhere moving into Britain.
Yeah.
I'm sure that had a lot to do with the current vote. If they had this referendum 10 years ago, I do not think it would have gone anywhere.
Right. I agree. I think people this year, over the last 12 months, seeing the problems that have developed in Europe, not necessarily in Britain as much as in Germany and in Sweden, Norway, Finland, they and just looking at the situation in Greece, where they've just been swamped by refugees that Turkey is basically just, shoving them, out the door without vetting any of them and using that as its club to get membership into the EU. And David Cameron had told voters in the campaign leading up to the vote, no, Turkey's not going to be a member before the year 3000. It's not on the table. It's not on the table. Well, this coming week on the 30th, Thursday,
yoink,
the EU is sitting down with Turkey to discuss, to negotiate
how
to bring them in. And Turkey's probably saying, we've got a couple million more Syrians here that we could just let go at any moment if we...
You know, there's an old phrase, those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Mm-hmm. And the European countries has, since the Roman days, and probably even before then, they have been infighting just as much as any other tribal region, and they have gone through war after war after war after war. The ones that just popped to mind, Napoleon, Crimean War, World War One, World War Two, World War Three is hanging in. It could start any moment over all of this. Who knows?
Yeah. They tried to cobble together a nation state out of sovereign states that have different backgrounds, different histories, and it's just not going to work. What's made the United States successful so far, at the risk of sounding politically incorrect, is that it was founded on a common history, a common religion for the most part, and a concept called the Rights of Englishmen.
Yes.
Which is...
which makes us descendants of Englishmen in many ways.
Right.
But London, we're like 200 plus years old.
Mm-hmm.
London's been around for 2,000 years.
Right.
That's an old, old city. And then you look at some in the Middle East, they've been around for a lot longer than that.
A lot longer than that. Yeah, in Damascus, at least about 9,000 years for Damascus, at least until it becomes a ruinous heap, according to Isaiah.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
A clock ticking for Damascus. But and this is the same problem that we've run into with the Middle East. In trying to, and this has been going on for 100 years, ever since the end of World War I, where Sykes and Picot sat down and just started drawing lines on a map and said, okay, you take this part, we'll take this part.
We're divvying up the Ottoman Empire.
Right. And we're going to make these sovereign states.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what you're doing is you were drawing lines that inside of which contained various squabbling tribes and religious sects that didn't agree with one another. And in very violent ways, specifically referring to Shias and Sunni Muslims, who for 1,300 years by that point, 1,400 years now, had been going at each other with scimitar and any other weapon they could get their hands on, because they really hate each other more so than they hate Jews and
mm-hmm.
Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to cobble together nation states of people that are that different was a stupid mm-hmm. idea. I mean, the Ottoman Empire only kept a lid on it because they were pretty brutal. I mean, Iraq was only relatively secure under Saddam Hussein because he was brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Libya was secure because Muammar Gaddafi was brutal.
You have to have a strong man
right.
to hold it together. Well, when we were talking last week, I think it was in the Gilbert House New Testament Fellowship, and Jesus was telling them in, you know, Matthew 24, the Olivet Discourse,
mm-hmm.
that nation will rise up against nation.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily mean country. The original word in there actually means people group or tribe.
Oh, like, was it the Genea? Or,
yeah, something okay. like that, yeah.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's happening. You were mentioning a headline you saw earlier today that Fallujah in Iraq has been freed from
ISIS.
The Islamic State.
Yeah.
The Islamic State had held on to Fallujah for a couple of years. The problem is, and I've been reading this now for a couple of weeks in reports coming out of Iraq, that the Sunni residents of Fallujah, and remember, in Iraq, Sunnis are the minority.
Yes.
They're about a third of the population.
Yes.
The Shias are the majority. The Shia militia that are going in there are looking for payback. First of all, they're still angry about Saddam.
Mm-hmm.
Saddam was Sunni, and he controlled the country, ran it with an iron
mm-hmm.
fist. So the Shias have been looking for payback ever since Saddam was kicked out of office.
And before even all of that, Iran and Iraq, they were at war for many, many years.
Right, right.
They hate each other.
They do, but the Shias in Iraq and the Shias in Iran are working together. And
mm-hmm.
the Shia militias that are operating inside Iraq, with the benefit of American air cover and airstrikes in support. I mean, American airmen
yes.
were launching strikes against the Islamic State in Fallujah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's my point. Iran is winning because they
right.
have figured out a way to take down Iraq from within.
Yeah, yeah.
The war never stopped.
The problem wasn't so much with Iraq, the state. Their problem was with the Sunni heretics inside
mm-hmm.
Iraq.
Mm-hmm. And the Ba'ath Party that ran everything, you know, that really didn't care one way or the other.
Yeah, dominated by Sunnis.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
The Ba'ath Party in Syria, which is controlled by the Assad family.
Mm-hmm.
Assad family.
Mm-hmm.
They are Alawite.
Wahhabi.
They're really more secular than anything else. No, and the Alawites are neither Sunni nor Shia. They're considered a heretic branch of Shia Islam, but the Ayatollahs have found it useful to be allies with,
mm-hmm.
with the Syrian state. So no, Saddam was not a friend to Assad or to Iran, but by putting a majority Shia, well, I mean, by giving Iraqis the right to vote, the majority Shia obviously are going to control the government.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this in 2005.
Oh, yeah.
Have we just created Iran's new best friend? Well, the answer to that question is yes.
Yes,
yes we have.
Yes.
And the Shiite militias going into Fallujah are now taking payback from the Sunni residents of Fallujah. And people are running and fleeing the city because, okay, yeah, yay, we've kicked out the Islamic State, but now we've got these angry armed Shia mobs roaming the streets. and they've got no love for the people who are there. It's not like we Westerners can't get our heads around this idea that it's not like the National Guard coming and securing a city during a time of unrest. Yeah. It's like, you know, having a rival street gang come over and take over your neighborhood.
Well, exactly. But, you know, if you go back to an earlier statement where we were talking about Daniel's vision, the big statue, excuse me, and the iron mixed with miry clay in the toes, which is the current era we're living in. Mm-hmm. If you look at the statue as history, the idea that the European Union wants to give rights mm-hmm. to robots may tip the scales entirely.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't get to vote.
Yeah. And so we want
our own referendum.
Well, and that was an interesting point, too. Iron and miry clay. I mean, you know.
And they shall mingle themselves. Yeah. It's definitely a personification of something, mm-hmm. probably spiritual. So I think it's way more than just the common market turning into the EU.
Interesting, too, that dream of Nebuchadnezzar was, well, I mean, it happened in Iraq.
Yeah.
And Iraq is still a source of complete unrest. I've been doing a lot of research on that period of history, actually going all the way back to Nimrod, because mm-hmm. his reign was significant. But what you think about this, and this is just really remarkable. Nimrod, probably around 3500 BC, established his kingdom based out of the city of Uruk, the biblical Erech. But his impact on history is such that the land has preserved that name, Iraq, for over 5,000 years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
And scholars have known.
Even longer than I've been around.
Well, yeah, even longer than Sam. The scholars have known about this. They talk about a period of history called the Uruk expansion, mm-hmm. where that culture that developed in southeast Iraq spread to the point where it was controlling, you know, northwestern Iran and southeastern Turkey and even over into the Levant. At the peak of his kingdom, Nimrod controlled more territory than Saddam Hussein.
Hmm.
And they were doing it with an army that was equipped with little clay bullets and slingshots.
You know, you're going to love our trip, excuse me, on the 5th. On July the 5th, we're mm-hmm. going to be in Kentucky at the Ark Encounter.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at a map of their whole compound. Not only is the Ark there, they've also got apparently an area just called Noah's Animals, so I assume that they're not inside the Ark, which is probably a good idea. But they also have the Tower of Babel.
Ah, interesting.
And a big building called Journey Through Biblical History, and a first century village.
Hmm.
And an area called the Walled City, which may be Jerusalem, doesn't say, but I assume it is. It looks to me like that's going to be a whole lot more fun than I thought when I thought, okay, we're going to go see the Ark. That's cool. But hey, look at all the other stuff. This Tower of Babel looks like a ziggurat.
Well, good, good. Because throughout history, there have been a number of artists' depictions that show it like, you know, more like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. But
no, it looks like a ziggurat.
Yeah, it definitely was a ziggurat. I agree with David Rohl's interpretation that the ziggurat was not at Babylon, that it was probably at the city of Eridu.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is stuff that scholars have known for scholars have known ever since they started digging up Iraq back in the 1850s, 1860s.
Can you see it?
No, that's very cool. Yeah, it looks like they've based the Tower of Babel on the biggest surviving ziggurat at the ancient city of Ur.
Yeah.
Which is not to be confused with the city of Ur that Abram came from, which was in northern Syria.
And not Arg. It's not that city either. That's generally where Derek and I live.
Yeah, Arg.
That Arg, which is right next to Crazy Town.
Yeah. But this is something I just found fascinating about reading about all of this and digging into a website that I've really come to appreciate a lot, academia.edu.
Oh, me too.
There are a lot of scholars who upload papers to this site, which you can download in PDF form.
Sam has a whole bunch of them.
He does. Yeah, they're all paw noted, thoroughly paw noted.
Really bad.
I know. The culture that just preceded Nimrod's kingdom of Uruk was called Ubaid. I'm not pronouncing it right. Ubaid. Ubaid, I don't know, culture, but it was started at Eridu and spread from there. And even that culture spread all the way as far north as southern Turkey. But the thing is, at Eridu and a couple places around it, they have found hundreds and hundreds of these weird little clay figurines that all look like lizard people. And they're all like, you know, hominid. So it's not like lizard people doing lizardy things, because many of them are female forms that are suckling young. And like, I'm sorry, breastfeeding is a mammalian thing. Reptiles don't understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
So who, and this is something
Silurians?
Else. Silurians could be. Yeah. Sleestak. Possibly. You want to go old school? Yeah. Yeah. Land of the Lost.
Oh.
A real show. That show is... for real intellectuals.
Yeah, honey. That's
Will
okay.
Holly.
Oh, gosh.
But that's kind of what they look like. And something I just found that scholars are just now discovering and realizing in the last 10 years, that Ubaid culture at Eridu and areas around it, they found sites now in Iran that date back to that same period. We're talking like 6,000 BC, 6 to 5,000 BC, where they were practicing cranial deformation. They were making cone heads.
Yeah. Which means that they were trying to imitate something.
Right. And looking like these, creating skulls that look like these little clay figurines they were making.
Mm-hmm.
So now we know about the Peruvian skulls and the Indians of the Pacific North, the Chinook Indians of the Pacific Northwest. But this goes back to the very earliest civilization. I mean, the Ubaid culture is the first urban civilization in human history. And that's the other thing scholars
pre-flood.
Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing scholars can't figure out is where did these people come from? It's like they suddenly developed out of nowhere.
Oh, you think?
And they were building brick houses, had paved streets, and were doing irrigation agriculture.
Like watchers came down and gave them a whole bunch of information.
Exactly.
Here's the how-tos.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's mind-boggling. Scholars know all this stuff, but they're not talking to people in church, and people in churches aren't listening to them either. So it's like,
well, you know, compartmentalizing knowledge is a really good way to keep Christians from learning stuff that is out there. And academia.edu.
Yeah.
Be sure to go there.
Some great stuff there. And it's a lot of it is not all of it, but a lot of it is coming from a secular perspective. But there are a lot of religious and Christian scholars who are posting things there as well. So there's a lot of good stuff there. And it just amazes me how much of this
there.
Yeah, there's a lot of there. So spending a lot of time there. And that's why when it's coming to my presentation, I'm going to try to fit about 3.5 hours worth of talk into 45 minutes.
Just talk really fast, honey. You know, they can always slow it down and watch it later. Yeah.
It's kind of what I did in high school debate. You had 8 minutes to talk and I've got 15 minutes worth of stuff. And so,
You're just throwing your cards as you go through.
Basically. So anyway, we're looking forward to the Ark Encounter and talking to the folks there. Don't know if we'll get to talk to Ken Ham. I hope we do.
You know, it's really hard to say. I assume that there will be other Christian organizations there, media outlets who are jostling to get in line to speak with him. I'll just be happy to be there. So I'm happy with however the Lord works it out.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with geopolitics.
Well, that's good.
No. I'm about to go to a totally different story. One that I plan on talking about on Sci-Friday next week. We may go ahead and stick that in anyway. But we've talked about many times the fact that translation software on the internet allows for the breaking down of language barriers. What if the software is really not that good? There's an article today that I love. It's "Translation Fails Get You Laughing as Well as Scratching Your Head." Here's a sign in Japan.
See.
Are you looking at it?
Yeah.
"Slip and fall down carefully" is what it says. It's got a sign. A little guy, he's just sort of bumping down. And here's another one. "Meet fried cat ear / the plate."
I like the one next to it better.
"Fries pull out the rotten child."
Yes.
Yes. Then there's "On the beach, beware of missing foot."
Okay.
Yeah. Here's one. It's the grass speaking. Instead of "keep off the grass," it says, "I like your smile, but unlike you, put your shoes on my face." No kill eye.
Yeah.
But You know, that's what we live for. There's another one that I cannot say on a Christian podcast, but you'll have to look at the story. It's something the duck until exploded. You can let your mind try to figure that out. Here's one on a dog, and the dog is a bomb-sniffing dog, but the translation says explosive dog. We've had a few of those over the years.
Yeah, Belle.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, gosh. She had digestive issues.
She did. Well, anyway, that's a story you might want to take a look at. We found it at the Daily Mail, so if you need a laugh.
Translation fails.
Translation fails. You can put that link in the show notes so the people that want to go there and take a look can. Yeah, the internet is breaking down a lot of barriers, not just linguistically, but also removing borders, actual national borders. The internet is the World Wide Web. We talked about it on Sci-Friday last week, calling it the Tholian World Wide Web, mm-hmm. which I think it really is. I think it's a big trap, personally. It's a whole lot of fun. We're having a great time while we're being caged.
Yeah, and caged in terms of what we're allowed to think,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, well.
Caged and entertained. It's a modern take on bread and circuses. Mm-hmm. We want to keep you fed and entertained. The day is coming, though, when we'll be so busy being online and posting our latest photographs to, you know, the various social media sites that... And videos that we won't have time to work, and therefore the day is coming when we will be paid, I believe, to stay home and provide content for this massive sentient AI entity.
Yeah, that's a frightening thought. I mean, that's a what's the word I'm looking for? Not apocalyptic, but it's just depressing, frankly.
Yeah, it's kind of depressing.
Kind of similar to what the people in the Matrix films were going mm-hmm. through. You know, people just growing in pods to provide energy for the machine, and the machine just basically entertaining them with the illusion mm-hmm. of living a normal life.
Yeah.
Google has become so powerful that there are experts concerned that the search algorithms that they employ could throw the election if they choose to.
Sure, they could
guide searches in certain directions about political candidates and the
how would you know other information is out there if right. you are depending upon the internet to serve you all your news, especially if it's a social media site?
Mm-hmm. They are curating it. And mm-hmm. we saw that with Facebook, but even just regular searches for, mm-hmm. for news it can bring back results that are slanted one way or another. And how would you ever know?
Yeah. We are both the product and the consumer yeah. at the same time. Yeah.
I mean, you know, really, in that respect, in earlier days when we were all getting our news from newspapers or television, the same kind of filtering was taking place. So that's not all that different. It's just that now when you're searching for things that, say, aren't news items, if you're searching for a business, mm-hmm. for example, and you're using a search engine to do it, how do we know that the algorithm that determines which search results you'll get isn't looking at the who owns this plumbing business, and what have they posted to the internet, and this guy's got a certain political slant that's not really approved, so we'll rank him lower on the results? Yeah. How do we know that that isn't taking place?
We don't know that, but I would argue that it hasn't always been the same. Back in the day when we depended upon newspapers, actual printed media, mm-hmm. for our information and to get the news, there back in the early days, about 100 years ago, there were lots of newspapers in small towns.
Sure.
So you had various viewpoints. Mm-hmm. You could, if you took all the papers in the evening, you could look through them and you could see, okay, this person is pro this guy, this person is anti that same guy, mm-hmm. this person is in between. Let me see if somewhere in the middle there. And you also weren't constantly online or constantly looking at the television screen. You were engaged going to the debate in the town square. So heard the candidate on local politics yourself. Now we depend upon their Facebook pages or their Twitter accounts to tell us what they think. Problem is, most of the time, they're not the ones Twittering. They have someone hired, a social media queen. Mm-hmm. We have one too. A queen or a person who actually goes on there and says, sometimes gets fired over saying the wrong thing.
Right. And those results that are being put up there aren't always the ones that were actually tweeted.
No,
we've seen yeah. some political candidates whose tweets have been shadow banned.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
we don't know that we're getting everything that they're putting out either.
But at the end, are these humans or algorithms
right.
or a combination of both?
Right.
You and I have been watching Person of Interest. We've talked about this on SciFriday quite a bit. We've probably talked about it on the previous PID radios. But this was the final season. And it ended, I'm not going to give you too many spoilers, but you and I, at least I looked at the ending and I thought, wait a minute, we're supposed to go yay.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure I want to go yay.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure it ended well.
Right. We
don't want to spoil it, but
again, have been guided in a certain direction where you're presented with a number of choices. Well, there could be this outcome and it could be this outcome. And the dramatic tension is, okay, which way is it going to go? The good guys or the bad guys? But there was another, you know, option in there as well, which is like, hey, wait a minute, maybe we shouldn't have AI at all.
At all. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because Harold Finch at one point said maybe he shouldn't have never built the machine. Maybe Samaritan should never have been built by his friend. But he said also probably somebody else would have built it originally.
Right.
Eventually, it's what we keep reading that the world's leaders keep saying, well, look, Ascension AI is probably going to kill us all. We have to build one because we've got to build the good one first.
If we don't build one, the Russians or the Chinese will build one, and mm-hmm. then we're really in trouble.
Yeah. Well, I'm not so sure there is a good AI out there, especially if you enter the notion that it may be more than algorithm. It may be more than software.
Right.
It may become sentient because it is now inhabited.
Yeah. And that gets back to Bible prophecy
and
the image of the beast.
Mingling together. Yes, it does.
And the mingling together. Mm-hmm. So amazing how we can manage to come
how
full
do we
circle.
Do that?
Even when we're busy squaring the circle. We managed to get it back down.
I don't know.
And inside the circle, it's always 68 degrees with a 60% chance of rain.
But it has no activity in it, just like the sun. Face of the sun right now is just sort of, you know, nothing.
It's
no smiley face, nothing.
Yeah.
It is absolutely nothing.
And that's unusual.
Well, we're at solar minimum, so mm-hmm. there should be less activity, but completely blank face, that is very unusual.
Yeah. There were some stories that were out this year, and of course, most of them were ignored by the people who are convinced that the science is settled regarding global warming. But there are some climatologists who have looked at this and said, you know what, based on the patterns that we see in solar activity going back through the period for which we have recorded these observations, that we may be entering a period of maximum minimum, if that makes any sense, that we're going to see such a downturn in solar activity that we are actually facing a period of global mm-hmm. cooling instead of global warming, to the point where, you know, like the Maunder minimum back in the, early 18th century where the Thames froze over and, or was that
can't remember.
17th century? I'd have to go back and look. But anyway, there's a concern that we may actually be looking at global cooling and not global warming.
Well, the last time we had a blank face was the last solar minimum, and that was in 2011. That was a very cool summer.
Mm-hmm. It was. The Maunder minimum started in 1645, continued to about 1715. Sunspots became extremely rare, exceedingly rare, as noted by solar observers at the time. And of course, temperatures got really cold. They called it the Little Ice Age. And there was a scholar who within the past year predicted that we would see something like that by 2030. But of course, the prevailing science is in, and so we're doomed to burn up anyway.
We are?
Yeah. Who would have set the winter of 1708, 1709?
You know, if we're going to burn up, I'm going to have one massive just, you know, blowout meal because I've been dieting for like 10 months. And I think I'm going to go, I don't think I could do it anyway, even if I had the opportunity. Yeah. I'd probably just throw up.
Yeah.
Reminds me, if you want to lose weight, don't do it that way.
No, don't. That is a bad way of doing it.
But I get asked this a lot, by the way, to the extent that, and I thank the Lord for this, in some ways it's kind of become a ministry. Mainly women, but I've had a few men write to me. wanting to know how I've lost weight. Mm-hmm. I will tell you how I've lost weight. You're not going to like it. You eat real food.
Mm.
You don't get to go to McDonald's. You don't get to buy packaged foods. You eat real meat with no sauce. You can season it, but you don't put cheese on it. You don't put sauce on it. You eat real vegetables. Raw is better because their roughage is better for you. And you don't cook out the nutrients in it, because if you're eating less food, every nutrient counts. Your body needs lots of nutrition every day. It doesn't need a ton of calories, but you need the nutrients. Mm-hmm. So if you're eating less food, make sure that every bite is as packed with nutritional content as possible. So I eat chicken breasts that we saute here at the house, and I eat real yogurt, which we make here at the house from the raw milk that we buy, and bake our own bread. It's multigrain bread, and I have toast every morning, and it's slathered with 1 to 2 tablespoons of real butter that we buy from the local dairy guy.
Right.
It is real butter, no hormones or anything, and it's really good stuff.
Smells
Bottom
wonderful.
Line is, put good stuff in.
Yeah.
Drink lots of water. And you'll be amazed, over time, you're going to take off about 2 pounds a week.
And it doesn't, and I've been losing weight as well.
I've
dropped below 210 pounds for the first time since 1999.
Could you get any cuter? I don't know.
I don't think. I'm not trying. It's just, you know.
It's just natural.
But I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything.
No, neither do I. But every day I feel satisfied.
So. Yeah. And it's just, you know, avoiding carbs and starches.
Yeah. A lot of that.
Junk carbs. Yeah.
And the main thing for me is I don't eat sugar. If I sweeten something, it's raw honey.
Mm-hmm. And I know there's a fellow at work that we work with who sweetens his coffee with raw honey.
I haven't tried that yet.
I tried that once. Nah, not so much. That's the one concession we make. You know, flavored creamer, but no additional sugar. I used to put
3 teaspoons of sugar in my coffee plus the creamer.
Plus the creamer.
Now I put in just the creamer, and that's plenty sweet for me.
Yeah.
In fact, there are a lot of things that I eat, and I'm like, how did I ever take a bite of that?
Yeah. You know those Nature Valley sweet and salty bars that I used? I had one yesterday and was like,
they're like candy. I can't do this.
Yeah.
If I do, I will eat for a snack. If you're wondering, well, okay, what is she ever snack? I don't eat chips. Don't any of those. We generally don't keep those. We buy a lot of walnuts, English walnuts, black walnuts, which we can buy locally. There are lots of black walnut trees around here. Dried cranberries. We eat fresh fruit, apples and bananas and oranges. Those things have wonderful nutrients in it for you. Also, blackberries, any kind of berries, blackberries, blueberries, raspberries. That's what I snack on.
Apples.
Yeah.
Apples. We've got an orchard that's not far from here.
However, I will eat half a square of high density, really dark chocolate.
Mm, right.
And we buy that. It's 80%. I think it's greater than 80%, but it's a very high cacao count.
Mm-hmm.
It's got lots of good nutrients in it for you, plus some good fats. So, again, try to educate yourself on what really good nutrition is. It will take a little bit of time, but after a few weeks, you will retrain your taste buds, and you will find yourself more satisfied with the leaner menus. Leaner in that you're not adding all sorts of sauces and things, but you'll lose weight and you'll feel better. That's the big thing for me. I'm in a smaller size, but I feel a lot better.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thankful for, because, sweetheart, you know, I see the pictures of you from a year ago when we first came here, and it shocks me because I didn't see you that way. I know. So it's not about appearance sake. I'm just. Know that as we get older, carrying additional weight is not a healthy thing.
No,
and
it is not.
We want to be around for grandkids.
We do.
So, you know, it could.
So if you've got some grandkids, send them to us. We'll be around for your grandkids.
That's right. So that, is really a blessing. And it's not been as difficult. It's easier to do when everybody in the house is on the same page. Debbie is eating healthier, you know. And because you were both eating healthier, then it's like, okay, well, I might as well too. And my big thing in the morning is that you've been kind enough to take the milk that we buy from the farmer, turn it into homemade yogurt, which is wonderful. It's got a tang that you don't get in the pasteurized, homogenized.
And it's so easy to make.
It is.
There's no yogurt maker involved.
Right.
It's essentially a heating pad and a stainless steel pot.
Yeah. And so it flavored with, sweetened with just a little bit of that raw honey to, so it's not sour.
Yeah.
But it still has that tangy kick. And then adding granola to it and then some fresh fruit. And that's breakfast. And that holds me till the other thing I do that you don't do. And I've done this because, going back to Tim Behrens and Al Gross, who were the morning team at the old KJSL in St. Louis back in the 90s.
Back in Tickety Too.
And View from the Bunker, I've got interviews with both Tim and Al. They were the best morning team in St. Louis of any format, religious, secular, whatever. They
absolutely
were wonderful.
Agree with that.
But they used to every morning take some raw, unfiltered apple cider vinegar, the Bragg's unfiltered apple cider vinegar. And they swore it was helping them lose weight. It was, and there were other claims, health claims made about Bragg's, like it'll cure your arthritis. What I've found to be true for me and what research I've read on the web is that what it does is balances out your blood sugar. I mean, a lot of us will eat breakfast cereal because we've conditioned over the years. That's what you have for breakfast, bowl of Cheerios or whatever in the morning. But whatever you're having in that grain in the morning, those carbs are converted into sugar in your blood. And suddenly your glycemic index spikes like you've just had a Snickers bar for breakfast.
Yeah.
But the apple cider vinegar, for whatever reason, that raw unfiltered stuff with the enzymes in it, levels out your blood sugar, so you don't get that spike.
Especially if you're dealing with that as a health issue, I think that's really good advice. I can't stand the stuff.
Yeah.
And no, I don't drink that daily.
Right,
don't ever drink that. I don't like it. But my blood sugar has always been, if anything, a little on the low side. So it's actually evened out a lot.
Well, The benefit, that spike, though, is that when that crash comes and you're hungry again. And I was always having to eat a snack when I was on outside sales by about 9:30, 10 in the morning. And now I'm full till lunchtime.
I just eat some walnuts.
Well, didn't know about the walnuts when I was doing the sales thing, but
you didn't.
No,
neither did I.
But
we were both so different back in those days.
Yeah, but both feel better.
Much, much better.
So, and that's the key thing.
Yeah. Well, which I'm going to need because when we go to Colorado City, Springs, if they let us in, in the past when we've gone to conferences, it's been really tiring for me. It's seriously very, very tiring for me. And I always go to bed early anyway. That's just how I roll. I go to bed at like 7 o'clock, watch an episode of Ripper Street or read some or whatever. So within an hour, 8 o'clock, 8:30 at the latest, I'm asleep. And I usually get up by 5:30, so I can see the dawn come up. I love early morning.
Yeah.
So I'll probably still go to bed early then. But halfway through the day in the past, I'm just dead. I just had no energy. And if I had to interact with a lot of strangers, wonderful strangers, but, sort of try to be engaged constantly.
Stressful.
It can be stressful, but it can also be wonderful. And sadly, because I was so tired, I just didn't appreciate it. So I'm really looking forward to this time.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it. If you are going to be there, please make sure you say hi to us. If you can't be there, of course, you still have the live streaming option, which is being made available. Bob Ulrich has managed to under-promise and over-deliver, shall we say?
Crazy Bob Ulrich.
Yeah,
what's he doing?
They'd originally said 32 presentations would be live streamed. Now it's 40 presentations. So I think almost all of the presentations are going to be live streamed.
Yeah.
Every speaker there will have at least one presentation streamed. So you'll get a chance to see Sharon and me both in the stream. But all of the presentations will be archived for 6 weeks after the conference because some of these presentations will be streamed at the same time. You obviously can't watch them all in real time. So this gives you an opportunity to watch some in real time, go back and catch the others later.
And the amazing thing is that they're not trying to make lots and lots of money per person on this. They're recommending you invite friends over and watch it together.
Sure.
If you can do this through your church, everybody at church watch
it. Absolutely.
And because it's archived, you can do it for many, many weeks, your Sunday school class.
Right.
And watch them.
So it's really a great thing. And you can find the information and the sign up at prophecywatchers.com. That's prophecywatchers.com.
Oh, and by the way, there will be DVDs released later this year, which will feature all of the presentations plus your amazing interviews where you juggle and all sorts of cool things.
Juggle questions. Well, we'll see. Yeah, I've got to work on that yet. I haven't put together the schedule for the interviews yet. I've got to start sending out emails for that. But
you're a busy guy.
Well, but I thrive on that, being able to talk to all of these people who have studied and researched and come up with these who are all way ahead of me in their understanding of prophecy, geopolitics, and so forth. I get to pick their brains. So that to me is a blessing. I think the last conference I did.
Is that on your diet?
18 brain interviews. Picking? Well, you know, that's probably pretty sure it's not.
I don't know. Some of those brains are pretty nutrient rich.
Yeah, but I think it falls under the category of abomination.
Yeah, I'm pretty, I'm thinking so too.
But that'll
wait, so we won't do that.
No. By the way, speaking of interviews, A View from the Bunker has been kind of on a spotty schedule of late as we've gotten busy, and I've been really trying to focus on getting my conference presentation together, which basically means having to, decide which of the things I really, really, really want to say are going to have to wait for the book. But I'm going forward, putting all of these interviews on video and posting them to YouTube. And Jake from seekfortruth.tk, Jake Rukowski.
Seek the number four.
Yeah, the numeral four. truth.tk, that's his program, has been helping transfer the audio archives of A View from the Bunker to video. And he's been putting together some really creative video backgrounds for these. So there are about five interviews up there now, the five most recent, and there's a new one going up this afternoon with Chris Putnam. And I've got to say, I've had the opportunity to interview Chris a number of times, and now that he's part of the Skywatch TV team, we can talk on a daily basis. But the interview that we sat down and did Friday for this View from the Bunker, I think, is my favorite of them all. I think the most meaty. And it's about the new book that he and Tom have just released, The Final Roman Emperor, The Islamic Antichrist, and the Vatican's Last Crusade. It's kind of embarrassing to admit, but during the interviews on Skywatch TV, I thought, the interviews came out well, but I thought we got more to the point on Friday of what the book's thesis is, which is that there's a false prophecy that was attributed to an early church father written in the 7th century in Syria, which is about the time that Islam was conquering everything in the ancient, in the Middle East.
Like
the apocalypse of Pseudo-Methodius. Saint Methodius was a 3rd century bishop of Olympus in Greece, and still a revered early church father. This was attributed to him, and it's had a lot more influence on eschatology in some sectors of Christianity than I was aware of. But it also inspired the hadiths of the Mahdi.
Oh, that's interesting.
And, I didn't get it when we were talking about it for Skywatch TV, but that all comes out in the View from the Bunker interview, where this came from. The whole concept of the Mahdi is not in the Quran. The Mahdi is not mentioned in the Quran at all. And he makes a good case, and I know Chris White has mentioned this as well in his book, False Christ, that Pseudo-Methodius was the inspiration for the hadiths of the Mahdi were essentially a response. Hey, the Christians have this final, king who's going to come out and conquer the world. What are we going to come up with? And so they invented the Mahdi, and that's where, and sadly.
And that may be one of the real reasons that ISIS posted that video a few weeks ago.
Could be, yeah.
Where they are taking Rome.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's significant, and that has a lot of impact. I mean, that's essentially the topic I was talking about or we'll be talking about in Colorado Springs. I said during the interview to Chris, okay, as we're talking, I'm realizing I'm going to have to rewrite my presentation.
You've
a
rewritten
fourth time.
It, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, that'll be posted at vftb.net and coming up probably within the next month or so, going to start spinning out on YouTube. And by the way, subscribe to the YouTube channel, please. The YouTube channel is youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. Also be posting the audiobook version of my novel, The God Conspiracy, on YouTube, and spinning those out on a weekly basis like a cereal.
Yeah,
over
for
6 months.
A year.
Yeah, and it's the kind of cereal you can ingest without spiking your glycemic index,
and
so that's healthy.
Yes, it is, yeah. And nutrient-rich. By the way, if you live in the area, Tuesday, what day would that be, the 28th?
Tuesday, Tuesday, Grommet. It is, yes, Tuesday, the 28th of June.
June 28th, you and I will be, along with Chris Putnam and Tom Horn and Shelley Putnam, will be in Blue Eye,
right,
southwestern Missouri, and you're going to be sitting in with Jim Baker. And, you know, if you haven't seen Jim Baker's show in a long time, you really need to watch his stuff. He is so on target now, and he's got a real fire in his belly to spread the gospel throughout the world. He's changed a lot in the last... You and I first started watching him when he was right, just in the very early weeks of his ministry. We caught him by chance, I will say, but I think it was the Lord saying, I want you to see this guy and see where he's starting again. He and Lori were just, they were talking to a few people at a restaurant.
Yeah, they started out in a cafe in Branson.
Yeah, exactly. And now they've got a wonderful ministry in Blue Eye, which is not far from Branson. So if you're going to be in the area, see if you can still get tickets. They're free, of course.
Yeah.
But you can, they run out.
Yeah, starting at noon Central Time on Tuesday. And I'm not sure, but I think that they have a live stream where you can even watch the live stream or watch it, watch as they are.
I know they did that on Sid Roth's show. I don't know if they do it on Baker's show or not.
Looking at this, yes, you can watch the live show taping on Tuesday, noon Central Time.
Well, we'll have to put a link to that.
Yeah, jimbakershow.com. I'll put that on the link. At least I believe, if I'm understanding this correctly, I believe that you can do
that. So we'll probably put a link also to it at the social media sites that we use.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's what we're all about.
You know, the funny thing is, when Jim Baker was falling from grace, as it were, back in the late 80s, that was when I was at the really at the peak of my top 40 radio career and going to St. Louis and program director and afternoon drive in St. Louis. And I thought I was justified then to sit in judgment of Jim Baker. And I know there are a lot of people today who could, because we see the comments every time Tom posts a story at Skywatch TV about being on the Baker show.
Yeah.
Who remember Jim Baker from 25 years ago, 27 years ago, 30 years ago, and don't know what's happened in the meanwhile. Now, Chris Putnam helped me get past that because Chris is an apologist. He puts the doctrine and ahead of all else. And he had some apprehension about going on Baker's show when they put out their first book, Petrus Romanus. But after talking to Jim, said he's not the man people think he is if all they know is what happened before 1990. Jim Baker admits that he didn't read the Bible until he went to prison. And
boy, did it change him.
Yeah. Yeah. So he doesn't call himself a theologian. Mr. Baker doesn't, but he is really looking to get the word out there. And so anyway, he and Tom have become friends, and anytime Tom does anything, Jim has him on the show, and they were gracious enough to invite me because I contributed a chapter to the new book, The Final Roman Emperor. They even invited me to speak at their church down there in Blue Eye on July 5th, and we're going to be in Kentucky that night. So.
I know, and we hated saying no to that, but so I hope that they'll invite you again.
I am astonished because, again, looking back to where I was in 1989, and Jim Baker, you know, if somebody had told me, you know, someday you are going to be a guest on his television program, I would have thought that person was absolutely insane.
If I had told you the week we got married or when we first met that you and I would be doing this one day and appearing on his program, you and I would never, probably wouldn't have never.
Probably gotten, would not have gotten married.
You'd have
married,
just gotten rid of me. She's nuts.
Well, we change as we age and hopefully, prayerfully, it's with wisdom.
We do. And that's why you should never make assumptions about people, especially people you don't know personally. But would you want someone who knew you back in the day, say 25, 30 years ago, to assume that you are still that person?
No. And I've known and I've noticed that people who I reconnected with over Facebook over the past few years from back in the day, from high school, who, hey, this is great. And, you know, after they see the kind of things that I'm linking to and posting, have gone away. And in fact, I've noticed some of them have defriended me and because it's, you know,
I consider that high praise.
Well, yeah, I'm not the guy that they thought they remembered. And, but so be it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that guy anymore. I don't want to be that guy.
I love the guy you are. I really, really do. Yeah.
I love you, sweetheart. And now that we've
blathered for over an hour,
made you the listener.
You Resh, said, well, you know, you, well, then I'm losing weight every time I listen to your shows.
We thank you for listening, and we pray for your, we pray for blessings for you. And,
we do indeed. And, you know, you're so kind, too. We've got lots of notes. Are you guys going to do the PID radio? Don't know. This may be the last one for a long time, but we've had a lot of fun.
Amen to that. Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content copyright Gilbert House and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone.